Tom appeared from his oblivion as we were sitting down to supper together. "Do you mind if I eat with some people over here?" he said. "A fellow's getting off some funny stuff." "Go ahead," answered Daisy genially, "and if you want to take down any addresses, here's my little gold pencil." She looked around after a moment and told me the girl was common but pretty, and I knew that except for the half hour she'd been alone with Gatsby, she wasn't having a good time. We were at a particularly tipsy table. That was my fault. Gatsby had been called to the phone, and I'd enjoyed these same people only 2 weeks before. But what had amused me then turned septic on the air now. "How do you feel, Miss Baedeker?" The girl addressed was trying unsuccessfully to slump against my shoulder. At this inquiry, she sat up and opened her eyes. "What?" A massive and lethargic woman, who had been urging Daisy to play golf with her at the local club tomorrow, spoke in Miss Baedeker's defense. "Oh, she's all right now. When she'd had 5 or 6 cocktails, she always starts screaming like that. I tell her she ought to leave it alone." "I do leave it alone," affirmed the accused hollowly. "We heard you yelling, so I said to Doc Civet here. There's somebody that needs your help, Doc." "She's much obliged, I'm sure," said another friend, without gratitude. "But you got her dress all wet when you stuck her head in the pool." "Anything I hate is to get my head stuck in a pool," mumbled Miss Baedeker. "They almost drowned me once over in New Jersey." "Then you ought to leave it alone," countered Dr. Civet. "Speak for yourself," cried Miss Baedeker violently. "Your hand shakes. I wouldn't let you operate on me." It was like that. Almost the last thing I remember was standing with Daisy and watching the moving picture director and his star. They were still under the white plum tree, and their faces were touching, except for a pale thin ray of moonlight between. It occurred to me that he had been very slowly bending toward her all evening to attain this proximity, and even while I watched, I saw him stoop one ultimate degree and kiss at her cheek. "I like her," said Daisy. "I think she's lovely." But the rest offended her, and inarguably because it wasn't a gesture but an emotion. She was appalled by Westegg, this unprecedented place that Broadway had begotten upon the Long Island fishing village, appalled by its raw vigor that chafed under the old euphemisms and by the too obtrusive fate that herded its inhabitants along a shortcut from nothing to nothing. She saw something awful in the very simplicity she failed to understand. I sat on the front steps with them while they waited for their car. It was dark here in front. Only the bright door sent 10 square feet of light volleying out into the soft black morning. Sometimes a shadow moved against the dressing room blind above, gave way to another shadow, an indefinite procession of shadows who rouged and powdered in an invisible glass. "Who is this Gatsby, anyhow?" demanded Tom suddenly. "Some big bootlegger?" "Where do you hear that?" I inquired. "I didn't hear it. I imagined it. A lot of these newly rich people are just big bootleggers, you know." "Not Gatsby," I said shortly. He was silent for a moment. The pebbles of the drive crunched under his feet. "Well, he certainly must have strained himself to get this menagerie together." A breeze stirred the grey haze of Daisy's fur collar. "At least they're more interesting than the people we know," she said with an effort. "You didn't look so interested." "Well, I was." Tom laughed and turned to me. "Did you notice Daisy's face when that girl asked her to put her under a cold shower?" Daisy began to sing with the music, in husky, rhythmic whisper, bringing out a meaning in each word that it had never had before and would never have again. When the melody rose, her voice broke up sweetly, following it, in a way contralto voices have, and each change tipped out a little of her warm human magic upon the air. "Lots of people come who haven't been invited," she said suddenly. "That girl hadn't been invited. They simply force their way in, and he's too polite to object." "I'd like to know who he is and what he does," insisted Tom, "and I think I'll make a point of finding out." "I can tell you right now," she answered. "He owned some drugstores, a lot of drugstores. He built them up himself." The dilatory limousine came rolling up the drive. "Good night, Nick," said Daisy. Her glance left me and sought the lighted top of the steps, where 3 o'clock in the morning a neat, sad little waltz of that year was drifting out the open door. After all, in the very casualness of Gatsby's party, there were romantic possibilities totally absent from her world. What was it up there in the song that seemed to be calling her back inside? What would happen now in the dim, incalculable hours? Perhaps some unbelievable guest would arrive, a person infinitely rare and to be marveled at, some authentically radiant young girl who, with one fresh glance at Gatsby, one moment of magical encounter, would blot out those 5 years of unwavering devotion. I stayed late that night. Gatsby asked me to wait until he was free, and I lingered in the garden until the inevitable swimming party had run up, chill and exalted, from the black beach, until the lights were extinguished in the guest rooms overhead. When he came down the steps at last, the tanned skin was drawn unusually tight on his face, and his eyes were bright and tired. "She didn't like it," he said immediately. "Of course she did." "She didn't like it," he insisted. "She didn't have a good time." He was silent, and I guessed at his unutterable depression. "I feel far away from her," he said. "It's hard to make her understand."
"You mean about the dance?"
"The dance?" He dismissed all the dances he had given with a snap of his fingers. "Old sport, the dance is unimportant." He wanted nothing less of Daisy than that she should go to Tom and say, "I never loved you." After she had obliterated 3 years with that sentence, they could decide upon the more practical measures to be taken. One of them was that, after she was free, they were to go back to Louisville and be married from her house, just as if it were 5 years ago. "And she doesn't understand," he said. "She used to be able to understand. We'd sit for hours." He broke off and began to walk up and down a desolate path of fruit rinds and discarded favors and crushed flowers. "I wouldn't ask too much of her," I ventured. "You can't repeat the past."
"Can't repeat the past?" he cried incredulously.
"Why, of course you can." He looked around him wildly, as if the past were lurking here in the shadow of his house, just out of reach of his hand. "I'm going to fix everything just the way it was before," he said, nodding determinedly.
"She'll see."
He talked a lot about the past, and I gathered that he wanted to recover something, some idea of himself, perhaps, that had gone into loving Daisy. His life had been confused and disordered since then, but if he could once return to a certain starting place and go over it all slowly, he could find out what that thing was. One autumn night, 5 years before, they had been walking down the street when the leaves were falling, and they came to a place where there were no trees and the sidewalk was white with moonlight. They stopped here and turned toward each other. Now it was a cool night with that mysterious excitement in it which comes at the two changes of the year. The quiet lights in the houses were humming out into the darkness, and there was a stir and bustle among the stars. Out of the corner of his eye, Gatsby saw that the blocks of the sidewalk really formed a ladder and mounted to a secret place above the trees. He could climb to it if he climbed alone, and once there he could suck on the pap of life, gulp down the incomparable milk of wonder. His heart beat faster and faster as Daisy's white face came up to his own. He knew that when he kissed this girl, and forever wed his unutterable visions to her perishable breath, his mind would never romp again like the mind of God. So he waited, listening for a moment longer to the tuning fork that had been struck upon a star. Then he kissed her. At his lips' touch, she blossomed for him like a flower, and the incarnation was complete. Through all he said, even through his appalling sentimentality, I was reminded of something. An elusive rhythm, a fragment of lost words that I had heard somewhere a long time ago. For a moment, a phrase tried to take shape in my mouth, and my lips parted like a dumb man's, as though there was more struggling upon them than the wisp of startled air. But they made no sound, and what I had almost remembered was uncommunicable forever.